and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at. Cook County residents are getting another shot at filing property tax appeals. One of the Board of Review Commissioners is here to explain why.
Clean slate.
A new bill could offer a new beginning to people with criminal records. And the Chicago Park District unveils its budget for next year. More on the new projects planned for the city's parks. First off tonight, new legislation sparked by a Dalton woman forced to give birth in a truck after being sent home by a Northwest Indiana hospital. Mercedes Wells and her husband Leon joined Congresswoman Robin Kelly today as Kelly announced she'll be introducing a bill calling on hospitals to create safe discharge labor plans. Now, those would include the hospital's justification for the discharge, making sure the patient understands the reasoning, and would also include racial bias training. Wells says she's still dealing with the trauma of the experience and had to return to the hospital when she experienced pain she hadn't had after previous births. She said the pain is emotional as well.
I pushed through it as good as much as possible just so I can fight for a change, you know, make things different. Make sure no other woman, no other black and brown woman have to deal with such, you know, disdain.
O'Hare braces for a record-breaking number of travelers. The Chicago Department of Aviation says projections show nearly 2 million travelers are set to pass through O'Hare and Midway airports between today and Monday. O'Hare is expected to seat more than 1.6 million people, a nearly 10% increase over last year, which would mark the busiest Thanksgiving period the airport's ever seen. Sunday looks to be the heaviest day for holiday travel at both Midway and O'Hare. Officials say passengers should, yeah, you guessed it, give themselves plenty of extra time. If you can't catch a ride on Santa's sleigh, how about his bus instead? Earlier today, the CTA unveiled its annual holiday bus with a redesigned exterior, a fully decked out and festive interior, plus the big guy himself, of course. Imagine hopping aboard that bus for your morning commute. The bus began its runs today and will be making merry around town until December 20th. Find out when you can catch the CTA's holiday bus and trains, plus much more at WTTW.com/holiday-events. Up next, the Cook County Board of Review is reopening its property tax appeal window. What you should know after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
After a four-month delay, many Cook County property owners got a shock when their property tax bills arrived. The median homeowner's bill went up by a record-setting 16.7%. To help cope with what they call unprecedented circumstances, the Cook County Board of Review is announcing everyone who lives in a Cook County township that's already closed its property tax appeal window will have another shot to file. Joining us with more on that is Samantha Steele, Board of Review Commissioner for District 2. We should note we also invited the other two Board of Review Commissioners, Commissioners George Cardenas and Larry Rogers Jr., but they declined. Samantha Steele, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me.
So we had Assessor Fritz Kagi on the program last week discussing why bills had gone up for some homeowners. He hinted at a bit of disagreement between your two offices. Here's some of what Kagi had to say.
When we finished our reassessment of Chicago, homeowners would have had actually 2 percentage points less of the burden than they started with, because we saw residential values going up, but we saw commercial values being higher than where they had been in the last reassessment. These values were cut at the Board of Review by nearly 20% for commercial properties, whereas only for 1% for residential properties, and that shifted about $500 million of the burden, according to the Treasurer, on to homeowners.
So, Commissioner Steele, what's your reaction to those comments?
You know, Assessor Kagi has talked a lot about the Board of Review, and I think it's important for everyone to understand the Board of Review's role in the property tax cycle. We are the due process for taxpayers. So if you feel that the assessor has unjustly raised your assessment, you come before the Board of Review. After the Board of Review, if you are not pleased with our values or you know your appeal results, you can go on to the PTAB. It's called the Property Tax Appeal Board. It's the state level, or the circuit court. And so there are two different branches that you can maintain, you know, your appeal at. So the Board of Review is just one level. We're your local level for appeal. And yes, we settle appeals. That's the role that we play. And so, you know, while he makes those statements, it's misleading. You know, we had roughly around 50%, 56% of appeals at the Board of Review settled. And so if a taxpayer doesn't submit an appeal, there is nothing we can at the Board of Review can do. And so you're just getting those settlements from people or businesses that are appealing at our office.
You know, Kagi also argued some of these rising residential assessments in South and West Side neighborhoods reflect wealth creation. But of course, some homeowners say higher bills are pushing them out. How do you balance those?
So, you know, I go back a few years and I think about Pilsen. You remember they were just overly assessed, and the assessor talks a lot about, you know, his new models. He doesn't meet national industry standard levels, and so, you know, there are levels across the country that say if your assessment is X but the sale price was Y, you have to add a factor in there to balance it out, and that's to bring it to a market value. The city try, which happened last year, which is the tax bill that a lot of people are seeing right now, he didn't meet those industry standards. The Cook County has not had a physical inspection of properties since 1997. So you're looking at close to 30 years of properties not having a physical inspection. And when I say physical inspection, I mean the assessor's office isn't going out and looking at the overall appearance of your house.
Sure.
So in Pilsen, where, you know, you had foreign companies coming in and purchasing properties, and or individuals coming in, purchasing them, remodeling them, you have the longstanding residents that haven't done that. And the assessor really needs to, and I say redelineate the neighborhoods. And so he needs to make sure that the assessments are reflective of what is actually going on, not just these mass models. That is something that I have been advocating for a couple of years now, is that we need a physical inspection of the properties. We need to redelineate the neighborhoods. Until that is done, you're just going to keep seeing people appeal. We have a third of the county appeal every year. In other jurisdictions, you see like a 5% appeal rate. And
sure.
So that's substantial.
You know, you backed a study earlier this year looking at communities where assessments were higher than sale prices. What have you found?
We found that the assessor was overvaluing properties. It was the city try, and mm-hmm. So I reviewed, and my staff had look at, you know, the assessor's values and compared them. And so you're seeing, like, if a property sells, the assessor needs to go out and see, why did that property sell? What did it look like at the sale date? They're not doing that. And so properties are selling, and then someone's coming in and they're fixing them, or they have already fixed them up to sell,
sure.
Right? And that's where the disconnect is we're seeing. So the Board of Review, we saw a 5% decrease in appeals at our office. You know, we're exploring the option of reopening and what that looks like for taxpayers. But taxpayers need to understand that that is this next tax bill.
Sure.
So the tax bill that they would get next year, not the current tax bill. And so there is nothing the Board of Review can do to help them now. I would strongly encourage taxpayers to look at their assessed value, look at their property record card, and make sure that it's accurate. Make sure that what the assessor has is reflective of what they actually have in their property. Make sure they're getting their homeowners exemptions, their senior freeze, their veterans exemptions, and what any exemption that they qualify for.
Yeah, making sure they're not leaving anything on the table there.
Correct.
You know, there's this so-called circuit breaker bill that's been introduced in the General Assembly, which would offer credits to homeowners who've seen their property taxes go up by 25% or more year over year, mirroring laws in quite a few other states. Is that a measure that you would support?
Yes, but ultimately, we're creating more Band-Aids for a sinking ship. if the assessor doesn't go out and physically inspect properties, we're going to have to find little remedies to the underlying cause. And the underlying cause is making sure that the data he has is accurate. And it just plainly simple isn't. And you see that with a third of the properties appealing every year. You know, the assessor has made comments that the Board of Review is tied to property tax appeal attorneys. I take offense to that. I personally do not accept campaign contributions from property tax attorneys. And so for him to mislead taxpayers to think that the Board of Review is in the pocket of special interest, it's a disservice to the taxpayers. It's offensive, and it really should stop.
Should Cook County consider caps that some other municipalities have, you know, sort of limiting how much a homeowner's bill can go up year over year?
I would say yes. I would also, and this is something that my policy team has been working on, is the assessed value, how much that should go up every year after year, right? So the assessed value can increase substantially. And we saw that in Rogers Park this last cycle for the Chicago Tri. We saw a 300% increase. You know, property owners can't afford that. With your grocery bills going up, gas going up, every expense is going up, and your property tax bills increasing 300%, it's people are being taxed out of their homes. And it's a disservice to our taxpayers.
We've got just about 20 seconds left, but I want to ask, do we know yet when property owners will be able to file in these reopened windows?
We do not. So my office, my colleagues and I are working out a schedule and what that looks like for future tax bills. So we don't want to delay anything, but we also want to provide that opportunity. It would just be for individuals that had not appealed already.
Sure.
At our office. So.
All right. Well, I'm sure a lot of folks will be awaiting that eagerly, and we'll be sure to let them know. Commissioner Samantha Steele, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Up next, how people who have been impacted by the criminal justice system are hoping for a clean slate. Years ago, we brought you the series Permanent Punishment, where we explored the challenges people face after they've served a sentence in prison. One of them was record sealing, a way of making those convictions only available to certain institutions like law enforcement. Now, activists hope they've created a path to making that process much easier for those who need it. Brandis Friedman has the story.
Nobody's asking, what was your experience when you go through these programs?
Activist Marlon Chamberlain has been driving this issue for a long time.
If you filled out a slip, made a phone call, sent the email, like, this is a win for us. Like, we went to the Capitol saying, clean slate, can't wait.
He and thousands of others like him have finally notched a win.
Feels good. But the way I'm wired, my brain is instantly thinking about implementation, but this was a huge milestone.
He's referring to the Clean Slate Act, passed during the fall veto session in Springfield. The legislation is designed to automate the sealing of certain criminal offenses. Currently, more than 2 million people in Illinois are eligible to have their records sealed, but haven't acted on what is currently a cumbersome, lengthy process.
You can talk to one person who would say, hey, because I was well-connected, supported in sort of like the nonprofit space, I had access to attorneys, and so for me it took 6 months. But then there are some who we've spoken to where it's been a 3-year waiting period where it's court dates that were rescheduled, canceled, or you didn't have access to an attorney.
That's not true justice. Justice is when it's fair and equitable and open for everyone.
State Senator L.G. Sims was one of the bill's chief sponsors.
Sealing allows for law enforcement, allows for certain governmental entities to still have access to the information. It wouldn't make the public any less safe, but it would make that information not available to private entities so that individuals would have access to housing, access to employment, access to education.
Give it a hand, y'all.
37-year-old Julian Sims was released from prison 3 years ago after serving time on drug-related charges.
When I was incarcerated, I got my culinary. I actually had my electrician certification in there, too.
Could you get a job as an electrician after you got out?
No, because what they told me was I wasn't allowed to go on people's houses because I was a criminal. I have a background.
As with the current ceiling laws, the legislation only applies to misdemeanors, ordinance violations, and class 1-4 felony convictions, unless they involve violence. So, no murder convictions, DUIs, or class X felonies like armed robbery or sexual assault. The new legislation also removes the drug testing requirement to seal felony drug convictions. Chamberlain, a longtime advocate and someone who's served time for federal drug charges himself, says passing the Clean Slate Act is just the beginning. Hundreds of state and local laws prevent system-impacted people from moving on.
There's restrictions around volunteering at your children's schools, certain professional licensing that folks can't have with the arrest and conviction record. So there's a list over 1,000 statutes that we have cataloged that still exist. And our goal is to build a permanent institution so that we can continue long after Marlon decides to retire. We want this fight continued until we have eliminated all of those statutes.
For now, Julian Sims says a clean slate is at least a start.
I want to start a class that I could teach automotive so that I could put in my neighborhoods to grow my neighborhood, because I feel if they got more opportunities, they got other better ways to grow.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman.
The Clean Slate Act passed the Illinois Senate 39-17. Republican State Senator Steve McClure was one of the nay votes. In a statement, he says in part, quote, "This legislation eliminates provisions in current law that make sure people are rehabilitated before their criminal records are sealed and hidden from public view. We can't have a system where criminals are repeatedly allowed to automatically wipe their records clean and restart a life of crime all over again without repercussions." That said, advocates expect that Governor Pritzker will sign the legislation. It would go into effect next summer, when state police would start developing the process, overseen by a task force, before the first phase of records will be automatically sealed on January 1st, 2029. We're back with more right after this.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities, this story is part of Chicago Tonight, Black Voices.
A long-awaited field house, plans to make toxic lakefront land into a public park, and new efforts to address homelessness. Those are among the items in the Chicago Park District's new budget, which is set for a final vote next month. Joining us to discuss it is Chicago Park District Superintendent Carlos Ramirez Rosa. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to the show. So this is a $637 million budget, and it closes a $30 million deficit, the largest since the pandemic. How did you manage to close that gap?
When we entered this budget season, we faced a $30 million budget deficit. That was driven by rising personnel and maintenance costs, but also by decreasing state revenue. So the personal property replacement tax, which is one of the pass-through dollars we get from the state. So that posed a real challenge for the Park District. But I'm very proud to say that we were able to close that gap without layoffs, without compromising service to our patrons, and without having to cut the core functions of what the Park District does. So we identified efficiencies, we made reasonable and modest revenue adjustments, and we responsibly used our TIF surplus dollars, a $46 million TIF surplus for next year, in order to balance our budget and to keep our programming accessible, affordable, and of course to keep the parks there as a stable resource for our families.
This plan budgets for a new staff member that would be aimed exclusively at addressing homelessness in the parks, which has been, you know, a very contested issue in recent years. What do you envision their job will entail?
That's a really great question. So unfortunately, we have seen an increase in homelessness across the nation, and Chicago is no exception. And we expect that with some of the cuts happening at the federal level, that we're going to see that increase year to year in the coming years. And so what we really want to make sure that we're doing is that the Park District is a key and lead agency in effectuating the city's five-year plan to address homelessness. So the city's chief homelessness officer, Cindy Soto, she has been working with the Department of Family Support Services. She's been working with the state. She's been working with local advocates to develop this plan. It's near the final stages of development and will be announced early next year. And this staffer will work to ensure that we have coordination with the Department of Family Support Services. That coordination is already occurring. I'm part of that coordination. coordination. Our deputy chief of operations is part of that coordination. Numerous staff members in the Park District are part of coordinating those efforts. But this staffer will really take it to the next level and make sure that we are helping to connect Chicagoans experiencing homelessness with housing, but also that we're making sure that our parks are safe and accessible for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, you know, encampments and parks have drawn criticism from some neighbors, from some officials, including after fires along the North Shore Channel. But, you know, a lot of advocates and folks who are living in the parks say they don't necessarily feel like they have somewhere safe to go. How do you try to balance those concerns?
Well, we have decades of research that show that housing is the solution to homelessness. And we also want to make sure that our parks remain accessible. And so we have been working through a working group model. So we've been polling our staff internally. We've been also meeting with stakeholders externally. And we've been looking at best practices nationally to really figure out what's the best direction for us to go. We know that if an encampment is impinging on park programming, if it's near a playground, if it's near homes, those are instances where we need to take action. But we want to ensure that we're also reducing recidivism. So, you know, before closing an encampment, we want to make every best effort that we can to connect those individuals with housing and shelter so they just don't end up in another park.
Yeah. This budget includes $25 million for a new Ogden Park Fieldhouse, long-awaited project there in Englewood. Some of the funding actually came from a personal aide from State Senator Willie Preston, who you know grew up playing there. Are there future opportunities for more collaboration with Springfield to help fund these sorts of projects?
Absolutely. So we are so grateful to our partners in Springfield, from the governor on down, for their support for infrastructure improvements. You know, when you look at these infrastructure improvements and these new capital projects that we're bringing online at the Park District, it really needs a lasagna of funding, different layers of funding. So we have, you know, obviously TIF dollars coming from the city, and we're so grateful to the mayor and Alderman David Moore for his championing of this project. We also have capital dollars coming from the Park District budget, and then, of course, dollars coming from State of Illinois electeds as well. So through that capital funding stack, we were able to accomplish moving towards the next stage for this project, which is the design phase for Ogden Park in Englewood. It's a historic field house, but in the 70s, they really just messed it up. So that community deserves a beautiful, brand new field house, and that's exactly the design process that we're going to kick off next year, now that we have the funding necessary to actually get the project done.
A lasagna of funding. I'm going to steal that one. There's also $500,000 earmarked to turn the Calumet Park disposal area, which is long used by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's going to become a lakefront park. The Corps dropped plans to expand that site after legal challenges, which I imagine, you know, a lot of folks in that community are excited about. How much work is ahead to clean that site up?
Yeah. Well, at the Park District, we are committed to environmental justice and environmental sustainability. And the confined disposal facility is a 43-acre site where Calumet Harbor Lakes meets Lake Michigan. And it's been used and created through the dumping of dredged material. So we need the Army Corps to continue to dredge. We need them to go in there and to be able to keep the Calumet clear so that the Port of Chicago can operate. But a promise was made decades ago when that site was first created that once that site was full, it would be transitioned into a park. Unfortunately, under the prior mayoral administration, there was an attempt to expand the life of that facility for decades more. But I'm very happy that advocates working with Mayor Brandon Johnson, working with the Park District, we have been able to come together to say, no, that expansion will not take place. Instead, we're going to do what was promised to the community decades ago, and we're going to transition that facility into a park. So that planning process is going to start next year with money from the Chicago Grows Together Fund, which is a new fund we're launching for equitable infrastructure improvements on the south and west sides, using part of our $46 million TIF surplus. With funding from that TIF surplus and the Chicago Grows Together Fund, we're going to start the planning process for a new park at Calumet Harbor next year.
I know a lot of folks are looking forward to it. You know, some of Chicago's pools had abbreviated seasons this year due to lifeguard shortages. What's the Park District looking to do to try and prevent that from happening next summer?
Well, we should be very proud of Chicagoans that the Park District operates the largest lifeguard program in the nation per capita. Only New York City has more lifeguards than us, but they have many, many more millions of residents. We staff 23 beaches over 26 miles, and those beaches are open from Memorial Day until Labor Day. That's our first priority. And then, of course, we staff 70-plus pools in our neighborhoods. And I'm really proud that we have been working to expand our Lifeguard Explorers program. So our
budget for next year continues that expansion. And the Lifeguard Explorers program is a program for young people in our neighborhoods that need to learn how to swim, want to learn how to swim, but also can then become lifeguards. So we help prepare them to take the lifeguard test. That program has had success year after year. It's helping us diversify our lifeguard force. It's helping us provide opportunities for young people to have a great summer job. So I'm really proud that this summer was the first summer since the pandemic that we opened up all of our pools 7 days a week, and we're committed to continuing that success.
Summer feels like a long way off, but it'll be here before we know it. It'll
be here before you know it.
All right, Carlos Ramirez-Rosa, Chicago Park District, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Local food pantries step up as Thanksgiving approaches, and new requirements are coming for SNAP recipients. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.